This is Wade Rathke, and you're listening to Wade's World, a Voice of the People program. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wade's World, whether that's the east side of Little Rock, Greenville, or New Orleans, or on Acorn Radio in Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay, points north and south, east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at kabf.org. and acornradio.org. A podcast will be available this show on these websites and at www.affiliatedmediamovement.org. You know the story on Wade's World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world, and today we're talking to Suzanne Gordon, who is a fellow at the
Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute.
Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute, but has been researching for a while and working on the veterans issue. She's also a co-editor at the Cornell University Press series and one of the few people we've ever had twice on Wade's World. So the last time, Suzanne, we talked about a shorter book you did on veterans, but now you've got a new book called Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope to the Nation's Veterans. Let's first start and remind people, as I know you will, what all does the Veterans Administration do in terms of veterans health care? Because that's geriatric to primary to this, the whole nine yards.
So there's the Department of Veterans Affairs in Washington, which is the second largest department in the United States government. And it is divided into three agencies: the Veterans Health Administration, which is the largest; the Veterans Benefit Administration, which determines which veterans get which benefits and so forth; and the National Cemeteries. And when people are debating in the press now, they're usually talking about the Veterans Health Administration, which has 300,000 or more employees, takes care of 9 million of America's 20 million veterans, because not all veterans are eligible for veterans health care.
We'll get you to explain that again to us later. Okay.
Sure. And has a budget of something like, I don't know, between $70 and $80 billion a year, which is a very large part of pot of gold that the private sector would love to get a hold of. And the Veterans Health Administration is the largest healthcare system in the United States. It's the only integrated healthcare system in the United States, and it's the only publicly funded healthcare system in the United States. And it is, I have spent 5 years traveling to VHA facilities. There's about 1,700 different sites of care, over 150 medical centers. And every place you go, almost, you'll see you'll often go past a sign, VA hospital, VA
right,
hospital.
Sure.
There are clinics, there are residential programs, there are nursing homes, which are called community living centers. And basically, of course, because there's VA facilities in every state and there's 1,700 sites of care, I couldn't go to all of them, but I visited VAs from Honolulu to Boston to Vermont and in between, and sat in rooms with veterans in mental health meetings and sessions.
What were you hoping to find on these visits?
So I embarked on this project more than five years ago because I was very curious as a healthcare journalist to try to find out what you can do when you have a national health system. And I knew they
could be a model for us, couldn't it?
Which should be, and in my view, is a model for America. And I knew that the care was good. I knew they focused on health teamwork, which is very important to me and I've written about. I was really stunned at how good the care is, how I learned what integrated, coordinated care really is, because none of us in the private sector really ever experienced that.
Well, now share that with our listeners right now. What is integrated, coordinated care that none of us know about? And you now are an expert. Okay,
now
we're talking. You're hearing that on Wade's World. Suzanne Gordon here.
So integrated, coordinated care means several things in the VA and in a system. It means that a veteran can go from Boston to to Honolulu or Peoria or somewhere, and they will be able to get care at a VA facility, so they can, and their medical record will follow with them.
Will be available. Okay.
As opposed to me, for example, who moved from Boston to Richmond, California, and it took 5 months to get my medical record from my primary care provider. They just kind of push a button, right? But really what integrated care means, and this is what is so important, it's what we, none of us who are non-veterans have ever experienced, is that you go to your primary care provider and you say, gee, I'm feeling down, I'm having nightmares, I'm having insomnia. And A, because they know you're a Vietnam veteran, they know that that's PTSD, and they're not going to just prescribe you Ambien like happened to a Vietnam vet who's a friend of mine who went to a private sector doc. You know, you don't give Ambien for PTSD. So they know what your problems are, and we can talk about that because veterans have very specific problems. But also, you know, rather than just saying, would you like to go to a mental health person or would you like to go to therapy, they will walk you down to the mental health provider, the psychologist or psychiatric nurse practitioner.
In the same practice.
On the same corridor.
Oh, okay.
So they have behavioral and mental health. They have psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers in a different building in the same facility. But on primary care all over the country, they have psychologists, psychiatric nurse practitioners in the same, on the same floor, corridor, and they will do what is known as a warm handoff. So most of us, if we say, oh, I'm feeling down, or and they say, would you like to see
another appointment?
I'll put in a referral. You make the appointment. You go to the appointment.
Or you don't make the appointment, which happens, as we know.
Yeah, or most of the time, there are no shows. They don't go. But this way, they take the primary care physician, takes the veteran down to the office of the psychologist or psychiatric nurse practitioner, and introduces them, and really detoxifies and demystifies the process, and that person often will see that person right away. Same is true if you're, let's say, a diabetic and you're having trouble taking your insulin, you will go walk down a couple of doors or around the corner to the pharmacist who's right there on the unit, or the dietitian who's right there on the unit, or the social worker who's right there on the unit, and you'll have a 45-minute meeting with the pharmacist to find out how do you take your insulin or how do you take your blood pressure meds or whatever. I mean, this is just unheard of, you know, in American medicine, because care is so fragmented and they don't have people co-located.
And one of the whole controversies in terms of, you know, medical professionals' opposition to coordinated integrated care is what money they make. But these are all public employees. They're all Veterans Administration employees.
Absolutely. They're Department of Veterans Affairs. They're VHA employees. So that touches on another thing, which is, Wade, that in our private sector, it's something like one of every $10 is spent on unnecessary futile care.
Right.
And that means you're getting three rounds extra chemotherapy because the oncologist is going to make money when you're...
Tests that you may not need because they're worried about liability and insurance and this, that, and the other.
And treatments and drugs, right, and so forth. And in the VA, because it's fee for service, so every hammer, you know, everything is a nail because you have the hammer of fee for service and you get money from it. In the VA, they're on salary, so there's no incentive to overtreat. And they have much more evidence-based care. In mental health, for example, something like 30% of mental health providers surveyed only 30% use evidence-based treatments. So that means that 70% of us are getting treatments that really there's no evidence for whether it works or not. In the VA, they have evidence-based treatment for PTSD, for all kinds of problems. But the real thing is that what I found really that was so impressive was that there's really in the VA, there's a community of care. And it's veteran to veteran, it's veteran to provider, and it's provider to provider and employees. And I've never really, you know, I've spent 30 years covering private sector healthcare. You walk into a VA hospital and you see people sitting in the waiting room, veterans talking to each other. You go to a waiting room in my, you know, primary care practice, nobody talks to each other, you know. You see people talking to each other.
Reading People's magazines from 3 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
it's one of the sad, I go for an annual checkup, and it is one of the saddest things in the world. And I deliberately go at the first appointment at 7 o'clock in the morning, so, you know, it's just one or two of us, or sometimes just me, or whatever the first appointment is. But
well, even, you know, it's interesting because as being a woman, I used to get mammograms, and, you know, here's when you go into a mammography center, wherever it is, you all have the same thing in common. You know, you have breasts and you're female, and you're all terrified about what's going to happen. And you know, you have this kind of unifying fear, worry, whatever. Nobody says a word to each other.
Well, that's such an interesting observation. We're talking to Suzanne Gordon, who's been healthcare journalist for quite a while and has written a new book called Wounds of War, about the VA. So what makes that culture so different?
Well, I think it's because people they work in the same place. They're driven by mission to care for patients, not money and profit. They share information. They share patients. They have a shared electronic medical record. They have developed these team-based models that they've worked very hard at to teach people teamwork and to teach people to communicate with each other face-to-face, not through, you know, notes scribbled in a chart. Providers have more time with patients. I mean, a primary care provider.
But that training must be key because obviously people have been women forever. And the experience of being a veteran is, it may have been a career, it may have been 2 or 3 years or whatever, but that's still probably a piece of the training, isn't it?
Well, I think that veterans, I mean, the providers and the employees all are trained in military culture. They're right. Also trained in recognizing suicidal, I mean, the VA, one of the big issues for veterans is risk for suicide. They're at very high
right.
risk for suicide. And every single employee in the VA gets some, every single one, doctors, nurses, administrators, elevator operators, gardeners, you know.
We talked about that on our last time we had you on the show. Yeah, exactly, which is why isn't that more common?
Well, I mean, the risk of suicide is high in America, but,
exactly.
You know, I mean, you're over 50.
Young people is one of the, you know, primary causes of death if
yeah.
you're, you know, less than 30 years old. So
yeah.
You'd think they would have that same sort of
tough. But it means money and time. And if your motive for running your practice or whether you're a doctor or, you know, you're essentially a small business person, or you're running a big hospital, which means you're a big corporate healthcare.
But how does the privatization argument work then? Because if you don't have the incentive to, you know, top off every bill and do the extra test or whatever, the classic argument for privatization is, oh, look, we'll save money for you in terms of mismanagement. How do they make that argument with the veterans hospitals?
Well, I think that privatization really never saves money in the public sector. I mean, it saves some money in the short term, but raises costs in the long term. I mean, it's like if you look at a hospital that gets rid of nurses and hires temporary nurses, you know, that they're paying the nurse's hourly wage plus the middle person. So I think the argument in privatization is just, it's just a smokescreen that you're saving money. Because
so there's no argument they try to make
well,
that they'll save money on X, Y, and Z?
No, actually they don't. And it's interesting, when it comes to veterans healthcare, the argument is that the system is broken and that veterans will do better and fare better in the private sector. And
so
their
argument is actually you'll get better health care.
You'll get better health care.
Which and you are arguing couldn't be true.
Well, it's not.
This is the best health care we have available
yeah,
in the U.S.
And basically what's happened is all the the media, all the things that I report in my book, and I you know, I've gone and sat at the Veterans Crisis Line in Canandaigua, New York, with suicide prevention coordinators. I mean, aside from the people that did a documentary on that facility, I'm not sure that anybody who's written about suicide prevention in the major mainstream papers has ever bothered to go up there to Canandaigua, New York, and sit and see what it's like to talk to suicidal veterans day in and day out, hour after hour, you know. I was reeling after only like an hour listening in. But I think that the mainstream media doesn't bother to find out what the care delivery is like, what the problems are, because there are problems. People in Congress are just, well, you know, I mean, it's so polarized. We've seen that with the Kavanaugh hearings, and they're not interested in the facts. And they just want to privatize. And it's tragic, because one of the things I've found, and I didn't know this when I started, was how many problems these veterans have. How specific are their problems? I mean, this is, you know, we talk about population health in America, and this is a system that does population health. In other words, it's not just focused on individuals, it's focused on understanding the problems of a population and delivering the treatment for those particular problems. Veterans have more pain than the average patient because, you know, running around with 100-pound packs on your back for years is not so good for you. They have more mental health problems because even if you never leave the continent in the United States, the training is brutal, right? They have more mental health problems. I think I just said that. And then if they've been in combat, you know, they have PTSD, they have traumatic brain injury, they have burn pit exposure, they have Agent Orange exposure.
We're not even talking about the survival rate now and the number of injuries people are coming back from.
Oh,
Iraq and Afghanistan from permanent war, are we?
Right, and people have exposures from training for permanent war that have never left the U.S. I mean, one of the veterans in my book never left the United States, and he had an operation from which he had terrible nerve damage, and other veterans have exposures to horrible toxins that are in these bases.
Right.
And so you don't have to be a combat vet to suffer these problems. Now, then you're a combat vet, you go to Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, and you end up having a traumatic brain injury and PTSD and an amputation and burns, whatever. And it's really terrible what these veterans are suffering from. And they're very, you know, these are like 18-year-old kids who haven't, you know, their prefrontal cortexes aren't developed. They go to war, they go into the military, they learn to think in black and white, us and them. I mean, they're trained to kill people, right?
Yeah, that's war.
I mean, that's what the military service is about, right? It's not about, like, cleanups. I mean, it's not the AmeriCorps. And, you know, their brains get, the way they view the world gets formed in a very particular way, again, even if they haven't gone to combat. And they have really particular problems, and they need people who understand those particular problems. And the VA has spent, you know, 70 years or more specializing in these particular problems.
Gotcha. And so what's the, speaking of Iraq and Afghanistan and the pressure that's got to be on the VA system, but what is the handoff between military hospitals in Afghanistan or Iraq and how they get transferred to the VA? Is that as seamless as
so
the
no,
process?
No, because the VA is not military hospitals. They treat veterans.
Right, I understand.
So,
that's why I'm asking about the handoff.
Well, and that's really an important question because, okay, you know, you get injured in Iraq or Afghanistan, you're triaged in a field hospital, you're sent to Germany or wherever, you're sent to the U.S., and then let's say, you know, you get a medical discharge and then you become a veteran. Well, you get, if you are a post 9/11 veteran, you get 5 years or more of free care at the VA, no questions asked. If you were a veteran from a different era, you're only eligible for BHA care if you have a service connected disability that you can document and or low income. And so one of the big problems in the military is that you have to have a paper trail to show that, you know, your knee problems are from jumping out of airplanes and or, you know, carrying packs around or, you know, a truck, you know, falling on your arm. And the military discourages people from going to the doctor, from going to the medic, because you don't want to be a wuss. You know, you should soldier through it, right? Man through it. And so that means that people don't have paper trails. And they're not informed that you actually better go to the medic and get a paper trail about your knee, your ankle, your shoulder, your wrist.
So it's not based on time in service. If you were a veteran for 10 years, for example, you don't automatically qualify. So
no, you can,
what is, you mentioned income as part of the,
yeah, if
the
you're,
criteria.
If so you're healthy or well-to-do, you can't get in. And so if you're
but what is the income test, do you know? Or
is
it higher or lower than sort of what the affordable care tests are?
I can't answer that, and I should
be able
to.
So it's not a percentage of poverty.
It probably is, but okay. I was
just wondering if it was more liberal or it was the same thing. But we should talk about that another time.
Yeah.
Not in the book. That may be the next book. We'll look for the anytime you want to write about that for social policy, we'll print that.
Well, I mean, one of the things that's very tragic is that it's also based on discharge status. So if you you have to have an honorable discharge.
Sure.
If you have what's called other than honorable discharge, because let's say you got drunk and got into a fight because you have PTSD, and then you're discharged other than honorably, you're automatically not eligible for VA care, even though your mental health care problems, your mental health problems were caused by the military. Now, Trump has said that people with other than honorable discharge should be able to receive 90 days of emergency psychiatric or mental health care, which is a good thing. But unfortunately, it's unfunded, and the VA is not staffed to accommodate these people. Plus, if you've had years of mental health problems, you need a heck of a lot more than 90 days. You know, they don't just, go away.
Gotcha.
In 90 days.
So when we talked the last time, we were in the middle of, you know, press reports and other things about waiting lines, and this was an issue in the latter part of the Obama administration. Relatively speaking, the last year has been a little quieter.
Well, actually, not really, because they passed when they had the.
I'm just talking about the headlines.
Yeah.
There hasn't been any, you know, allegations of scandal in Phoenix or whatever.
Not Phoenix, but there's been headlines in the New York Times about scandals in a tiny little hospital in Roseburg, Oregon, or in D.C., or in Manchester, New Hampshire, or whatever. I mean, the press
and
goes...
And those are on waiting lines still?
In Oregon, the issue was whether the VA was trying to send more complicated cases to the private sector to get better rankings in its quality metrics, which is a completely ridiculous allegation because it doesn't work that way, and the reporter didn't know that. But I mean, one of the really interesting things, and I deal with this all the time, is many reporters are assigned stories about the VA, and they're not healthcare reporters. They have no idea what they're talking about. They'll tell you. They'll call me up and say, you know, I don't know.
I got to do this story.
Suzanne, help me. You know? And but I think that what's happened that's really disturbing is that in Congress, you know, in May, they passed the VA Mission Act, which basically made the VA Choice and Accountability Act, the VA Choice Act, permanent. And so now there's going to be way more outsourcing and privatization of veterans' health care. And this was like a decision that was tragically, but not surprisingly, supported by many Democrats. and many of whom are veterans. Certainly, it was supported by Republicans who are veterans. There's a kind of movement, you know, that Jeff Bezos has taken part in, and other people.
Jeff Bezos, the billionaire, Amazon.
Richest man in the world guy, you know, who really cares about our health, right? And he has, you know, started this thing called the Honor, I think it's called With Honor, and it's trying to get more veterans to run for office. But, I mean, if you look at the veterans in Congress, they have been very unresponsive to veterans' issues. John McCain, the late John McCain, really was an architect of both the Choice Act and the Mission Act and wanted to privatize the VA. Seth Moulton in Massachusetts is a privatizer, and he's a veteran. He's a Democrat. So, you know, I mean, you're a lot better voting for Bernie Sanders if you care about veterans than, you know, Tom Cotton or whatever. And so it's quite...
Believe me, there are a lot of people that would be glad for Bernie to move to Arkansas and Tom Cotton to move to, you know, Vermont. I mean, if we could work that deal out, that would be something many Arkansans would support.
But, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But other than that, it's a little hard to vote for Bernie from, you know, our listening area here.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but there are a lot of folks, I mean, the notion that because you're a veteran, you're going to care about veterans is like saying, you know, Susan Collins cares about women, and we've seen what's happening there, you know.
Yeah, no, well, it's a common problem. So what's the good news then, Suzanne?
Well, the good news is that in spite of being attacked on every front, the Veterans Healthcare Administration remains the best healthcare system in the country. If you're a veteran, you should go to the VA.
If you can.
And I think every veteran and every family member of a veteran should be fighting to not privatize the VA, and so should every person who cares about healthcare reform. You don't have to be a veteran to care about the future of the only functioning healthcare system in this country.
So you're now, you know, having to be a cheerleader for the VHA. Why don't they do a better job of telling their own story?
Because
are they not allowed to?
They are not given enough resources to tell their story. A large VA medical center might have two PR people. A large, and spend a couple hundred grand on staff. A large hospital, medium-sized hospital, spend $1 million a year on PR. The national VA often puts the kibosh on local stories and doesn't really encourage them to go national with their local stories. It's very top-down, very dysfunctional. That started with Bush, because under Clinton, when the VA started changing and getting more outpatient care and becoming the system that we have today, the mainstream media, particularly the business press, started writing stories saying how great the VA was. Business Week, Forbes, you know, Harvard Business Review. This is a great system. It should be a model.
Duplicated.
And that the Bushies did not like that, because that countered their narrative that the government can do no right. And they started slowly but surely kind of closing down. Obama was very bad in that regard and never really defended the VA and really had a very micromanaging, top-down relationship to public relations in the VA.
Although you would have thought it could have helped the Affordable Care Act story, but they didn't tell that story very well either.
Yeah.
How are people going to get a hold of Wounds of War, your book?
Well, they can go to their local bookstore. They can order it on Amazon. I prefer independent bookstores, but they can order it from Cornell University Press. It's available in Kindle as well as in hardback, and I hope people read it. And you could also go to my website
and tell
find
people
out
what that website is.
It's www.suzannegordon.com.
So the full name of the book again is?
Wounds of War, How the VA Delivers Health, Healing, and Hope, which is very important, to the nation's veterans.
And the only part of that that's not in the title is, this is very important. so,
So this book is now out, as you're hearing this, from Suzanne and I, and we really need to get this story out about the Veterans Hospital Administration, don't we?
We do.
One of my organizers spent, I don't know, 7 or 8 years there, and in Little Rock, in fact, and he's had a little procedure that, you know, put him in the hospital, and just it's amazing how affirmative their care was. So it's definitely something, if you have a chance and you qualify, you need to make sure you use it. We've been talking to Suzanne Gordon, who's a health journalist, one of the few people we've ever talked to more than once, and we'll probably have to talk to her again about some of the subjects we raised here, including the integrative care model. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard, and as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. As the song goes, we say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we will have another guest, this is Wade Ramsey from Wade's World. Thank you.